You're listening to Strictly Business Podcast with Lindsay Williams.
It's Monday, so it's time for Shapiro World with David Shapiro from Sasfin Securities in Johannesburg. David, it's Labor Day in the United States, and that signals, of course, as I've said before, the end of the holidays in the world's largest economy and the world's greatest democracy. So we can look forward to the end of the year. I know it's not quarter end or anything like that. That's in a month's time. But when we go into the burrs, i.e. September, October, etc., I always think we're on the slope now to the end of the year. And, of course, we've got the small matter of the US election in that burr phase, November the 4th or 5th. It's going to be interesting, I think.
Yeah, I'm surprised at the news headlines. Harris is emerging as a clear favorite.
Yes.
And it's very interesting to look at the commentary, because I don't know, wherever Trump goes, he seems to lose supporters rather than gain supporters, you know, in everything that he addresses. And she has an enormous amount of money, which she's going to employ into social media, into the various ways of promoting. You know, he's left himself open to a lot of criticism, particularly where it comes to women issues, you know, to issues like that. I'm trying to think of some of the others. Yeah, the economy's being debated, but he's getting the young voters. She's getting the young voters, and she's getting the women. So, it's early to tell whether she can maintain it. But so far, she hasn't slipped. You know, she hasn't caused offense that will push people to Trump. And I think, Lindsay, the way I read it, people are relieved. You know, they said, oh, thank God, you know, we just don't want the man again. We don't want him. And I know that Walz has called him weird. And a lot of the articles I read, or certainly was his response to being called weird, it's upsetting.
Of course, you know, it has. But the other thing, David, there were two things that since we've last spoken that he came out with to show that he's clearly losing his train of thought, his mind. Yeah. I mean, he's not a very intelligent person anyway. We know that. He got one.
No, but he tells us he is.
Yes, I know. But he paid somebody to do his SATs. I don't think he ever went to a lecture. You know, anyway, it doesn't matter. We know he's not clever. He's actually worse than that. He's stupid. But he said, he stood up talking to, there were some kids in the background, and it was some sort of mini rally, and he started to talk about bacon. I don't know if you've seen the bacon clip.
No.
He said, people have stopped eating bacon. And I thought, okay, well, this should be interesting. And then he didn't explain that. He said, and it's all to do with their energy policy. There's terrible energy policy where they want wind. And what happens when the wind stops? We don't get any energy. And then he didn't clarify what he meant by bacon. What he was trying to say was that food prices have gone up, so people have stopped eating bacon. But he didn't clarify it. And everyone was sort of looking around, even his supporters. And then the other one was the weave. He said, the fake news says I ramble, but I'll take 9 different subjects. He says, I'll take one, and then I'll add another tidbit. And he does this whole thing with his hands where he's weaving something. And he said, a couple of my friends, really good friends, who are English professors. Now, the first thing is, he doesn't have any friends, first of all. Yeah. And secondly, they're certainly not English professors. He said, these English professors say it was the most brilliant thing they've ever heard. This weaving that he came up with, and I thought, well, that's it. You've just lost the election outright. I mean, he's a nut job.
No. He just makes up stuff. And I think people are getting smart to it now. You know, they're just, okay. At least we've got an alternative. You know, we've got somewhere else.
Yeah.
It is, you know, anyway, listen, you never know. You know, it's still where's it now? We're going in 2 more months to go.
Yes.
And anything can happen. But I think as he goes and as he sees his losing, he ups the ante. And in fact, all he does is push himself down again. You know, and they can't reverse it. I think it's up to her not to do anything stupid and just to continue along the same path. You know, whether she can or not, we don't know. But listen, we never thought we'd be in this position in a month when Biden was there. And he hasn't got Biden to take on anymore. He can't beat him up and address him. And people were very anxious, you know, that Biden would stand. And they knew that his chances were slim. So it's interesting. What kind of, if she is, does become president, what kind of president? Well, that's going to be another question altogether. She might just be the dumb person that he says she is.
Well, look, I will say this. She's not a first-choice candidate. But compared to Trump, if she can keep that madman out of the White House, then she's done her job. And maybe the Democrats can have a succession plan. But by no means is she the ideal candidate. I think you'll agree with that, David.
No, I do. I do. I think it's by default that she's landed where she is. I think she was chosen as vice president because she was a lady of color, that she was a female and that she was a lady of color. Yeah. And it just suited Biden at the time. There could have been 100 different people to be chosen. Yeah. Anyway, whatever. I'm much happier. And I think the world would be happier if we don't get a Trump.
I don't think we will. I honestly don't think we will. Unless he pulls several rabbits out of several hats, I can't see it happening.
And Vance is also, they dragging out podcasts that he did in 21. You know, his whole view on women. I mean, it's just crazy. The saying that really criticizing women for pursuing professional careers, basically saying they should be home producing, it's it's quite, when you talk about weird, yes, he's weird. He's very weird. And I don't think they did enough due diligence on the man, before they chose him. I don't think they went into his past speeches that he made and so on. They just saw him as a Yale graduate who'd come from a very difficult background. So, yeah.
When you're a politician or you're a prospective politician, the first thing you do is you go to your national security team and you say, dig up everything you got on this chap now. Did he take drugs at college? Has he got any criminal records? Has he got any dirt on him whatsoever? And clearly they didn't have a look at these recordings that you speak of, because apart from the fact that it's very, very public that he said Trump was the American Hitler and anyone that votes for him is stupid. And he said a few other things as well. How can you suddenly turn that around? It's like me saying to you, David, I really don't like you. You're far too friendly and you're not fooling anyone. And then the next week saying, please come on my podcast, David. It's the same thing. It's a complete turnaround. You either believe something or you don't believe it. And I think he still believes it, but just is an ambitious young man.
Yeah, he is. I don't think he's changed his thoughts at all, but he's turning out to be not a dangerous, but a very complicated person that I don't think fits in with where young America wants to go, from a very conservative background with very conservative views, particularly with his with females and with women. And I can't associate that with his wife.
That's what I was going to say. Where does the wife come in? She's an attractive, intelligent woman of color. What's she doing with him? What's he doing with her? Because he doesn't like that sort of thing.
I don't know. I don't know how she can agree, especially understanding her background, how she can agree with his policies. Hmm. Very difficult.
It is indeed. But anyway, it's providing us with a great deal of fascination, along with everything else, which we'll come to later. Some results out from the JSC. What have we got here? RCL, Rainbow, Bidvest, Sun International, Trading Update, and Sibanye. Choose one. Were there any of them that you thought, oh, crikey, that's unusual?
There are a few. I mean, certainly Bidvest, but the one that disturbs me more than anything else is Sibanye.
Yeah.
And particularly its view of where the palladium price is going, how it's impaired its assets, particularly in America, and which are the palladium assets, and also the outlook on the price. They don't see any major price increases, in the medium to long term.
Do they say, do they say it's because of excess of supply or complete lack of demand?
I think it's the situation, it's structural. I think that there's a concern about new motor vehicle sales, about the use of palladium. So I think there are a lot of issues about what they're seeing, and that scares me. If you look at the share price, if you look at the chart, it's just heading in one direction. Listen, it's also a company that's highly geared, that's got a lot of debt, even though interest rates are coming down. They're just not producing enough at a good price to kind of alleviate it. So it's looking very vulnerable at the moment. But why it worries me is that when I look at, you know, the other platinum counters, we've got a similar view from Impala, where they're saying, listen, there's no new project. You know, they're just sticking with where they are. And it comes back to that argument about where South Africa is. I just looked at the PMI came out now, the APSA PMI.
Plunged, which, didn't it?
Yes, it did plunge. And this is post the election. There was a bit of improvement in sentiment after the election, but that has not carried through. And, you know, it's employment, it's new orders, it's it gives an indication of what manufacturers think lies ahead. So that's worrying. And, you know, we've got this movement of everybody getting very excited about where we are. It's, yes, you know, the rest of the world's things are improving, rates are going to come down, we're probably going to a growth phase. But I think we've got a lot to negotiate here. You know, South Africa is kind of linked to China because of our commodities.
Very
There's a denial
so.
Of this.
Yes.
You know, it's important. I saw the iron ore prices back at 96 today. That's a futures price, you know, from 100. It's now holding below 100. So I'm not saying this is not going to bottom, but Lindsay, you know, the one thing you don't do in a stock market is hope. You know, and we always say hope and prayer are great for shul and for church and for the mosque and things like that, for religion, but not for the market. You know, you need more empirical proof before you kind of commit. You can't say, yes, it looks, you know that attitude. You say, no, give me something substantial, then we can turn around.
Okay. Anyway, we're at the end of the holidays. It's a myth that people suddenly come back to their desks the day after Labor Day and suddenly say, right, let's see what's been going on, because they know what's been going on. But on the other hand, it is an important period. And you're not going to change your position. I don't know why I ask you these questions, because I know what you're going to say. You're not changing your position until otherwise advised. Until the market turns, you're going to stay put.
Yes, yes. In fact, I discussed that at length this morning, because I'm constantly looking for that evidence. You know, the so-called rotation, you know, you're rotating into small caps. And I say, okay, why?
Yes.
You know, it's going to take time. Lindsay, what I'm trying to get at is it's going to take time before lower rates trickles into the economy and starts to kind of make it, make it felt in the economy. Lower rates, more money to spend, more money. You know, growth starts to pick up. It can happen from the first rate decrease, you know, because suddenly you got a few extra dollars, you go out and spend. But I think it's pretty early to make those rotational calls. And as I've said to you before, things have changed. Post-pandemic, things have changed dramatically. The way that we can't take what happened 5 or 6 or 10 or 15 years ago when rates came down and kind of put it into the world that we're in at the moment. There are tastes of change. Everything's changed. Entertainment, the way we work, the clothes we wear, everything. So I'm a bit of, you know, I'm scared that people just automatically reach conclusions based on what happened in the past, rather than think this through.
Your whole rotation argument is a good one, because what I have realized is, because of the way that things have changed and the way the market works, both from a technology point of view and from a psychological point of view, is that you can't just say, right, I've had enough of these growth stocks, now I'm going to get into value stocks. I'm going to go from the NASDAQ and certain parts of the S&P into the Dow Jones, and that's it. You can't do that. What I would say, though, is that if someone had a great portfolio like yours, generally great, and doing so well, because you pick stocks, if I've learned anything from you, you pick stocks that have good management, good balance sheet, pay dividends, and have a proven track record across all of those things that I've just mentioned. You stick with those. But occasionally someone might say to you, Viv might say to you, for example, I'm looking at this company in the Netherlands or in Silicon Valley, and it's a small cap, it's a $2 share or something, and they've got this technology that they're looking to develop. Then you have a little nibble at that sort of thing. But don't go completely value or completely small cap, don't you think?
Exactly. You know, you've got to understand the product that they're selling. And you've got to understand, is it going to make a difference? You know, are people going to rush into these stores or are they going to rush into this product?
Yeah.
And, you know, that's my worry. That's the concern that we just assume that's going to take place. I've been looking at this Ulta Beauty. Funny, Buffett has just gone into it. Ulta Beauty's kind of, you remember the OK Bazaars of beauty products. It's like, it's a very good business where you buy brushes and hair dryers and lipsticks and makeup of all.
But the value stuff, I mean, not the expensive stuff, not something from the Champs-Élysées, for example.
You can. It's not a Sephora. It's, you know, Sephora is more expensive, more exclusive, but it's a very good company. And I know, you know, my daughter goes there, my wife, when she's in America, will go down there. It's not small stores, they're very big stores. And I looked at their numbers and the numbers were down. You know, the numbers were, despite the fact that they're under pressure, there's no demand. So it's those kind of, those numbers that say, okay, let's hold back. Let's wait for the next quarter and see whether or not things are improving. You know, this for a company that you're going to buy for a long term, and I mean it, a quarter doesn't make any difference or 6 months doesn't make any difference. You know, even if you do miss out a few points, if things are genuinely turning around and it's looking good, you'll go into it. So I'm very nervous just to make and quick changes. And I've got to tell you the same thing with Nestle, because I was ready to be very, not just upset with it, Nestle. They haven't got their strategy right. It's taken time. I know the Schneider has stepped aside now and they're re-looking at it. And I was ready to bail. And suddenly I watched the share price and it's not going down. You know, it should be going down because everybody doesn't like the stock. And all the reports that are coming out are negative. And I was like, why is it not going down? And that's, to me, a warning sign. Hold back a bit. You know, something might be okay. You know, do you understand what I'm saying? If it's not listening to the reports, I say, well, what am I missing?
Well, you see, our old friend that we used to speak to regularly, Nick Kunze, used to say, just trade what you see on the screen. You can have as many negative reports as you like the ABSA results were negative, and yet the share price went up 5%. So just trade what you see. And until it turns, David, stay with your Nestle. Stick with your Kit Kats.
Yeah, exactly. So I came to a conclusion. I don't normally like to add more stocks, but in this case, I said, okay, well, let's add Walmart. You know, instead of selling Nestle, buying Walmart, let's just add a few more Walmart and then watch and see what the next action is.
Very good.
So I took that strategy rather than say get out of it because it's not doing what I thought it would do. It should do, you know, according to reports.
Well, the market is a strange mistress. Cannot be tamed.
No,
David, I was trying to get into a New Zealand rugby website because I looked it up. Where can I watch this? Because you can't get it on Dutch TV. And I can't get it on VPN because I don't subscribe to Sky. So I missed it. But then I saw all these pictures of the Airbus A380 flying over through an azure blue sky over Ellis Park, 62,000 people. That reminded me of 1995 when I was sitting right on the halfway line and SAA Boeing 747 came over and everyone was awestruck by this. And it looked very good. Not good for your carbon footprint, I might say. Not good for the environment. I don't know how many tons of fuel that thing uses. Well, I've got a big guess. It's the biggest aircraft in the world. But it was very good. What about the game itself? Because you suggested that, don't want to get you into trouble, you said the All Blacks were better than the Springboks.
I thought they were better. I actually thought they were better and unlucky to lose. I enjoyed their rugby. You know, South Africa's a very powerful team. As you know, they can put They can change the team half time, you know, and put on an equally good team in the second half. They're very good rugby players. And there were a lot of people who were outstanding. But I thought that the All Blacks were very unlucky. And what disturbs me, and I'm not, I enjoy watching rugby, but I don't understand the intricacies. And every time the All Blacks were defending us, a penalty, another penalty, a penalty. I said, what, you know, these are disciplined. These are professionals. This is All Blacks. Why are they being blown up, you know? And at the end of the day, that swayed the game towards a box, you know. If you're giving away 15 penalties, you know, and only conceding two or three or four or something like that, you know, you're going to lose. Because in the critical areas where it counts, the box would get a penalty and score, you know, that kind of thing. Yes, the pundits, the experts are going to tell me someone put their foot in the wrong place or whatever it is. You know, I find it very difficult to understand the game. And, you know, because of that, I knew that there's no way the Springboks are going to lose simply because every time there's a scrum, there's going to be a penalty, something the New Zealanders are doing. But anyway, they might have learned. They are a good team. They're a very good team. Lindsay, you know what worries me? I know we've got limited time. Is that rugby, you know, when I talk to my kids in Australia, and it's a game that's actually losing its appeal. You know what I mean? I know it's played by the French and it's played by the Italians, but I don't think it's got the worldwide appeal. And you can understand why. Because sometimes, you know, there's no running in it. It's just murrim, you know, just get the ball and...
Well, the Sevens was at the Olympics, and it seemed to me that the Americans liked it. And if it takes off, if the Sevens at least can take off in America, just like the shortened version of cricket can take off in America. Yeah. But I must say that in England, for example, there's been two or three teams that have gone into administration, club teams, because people just don't go and watch it. They've got the monster that is association football rather than rugby football to watch. You know, if you were a kid growing up and you're in the schoolyard, what you're doing, break, is you're kicking a ball with your mates. You're not throwing a rugby ball.
You're dead right, and that's happening in Australia and worldwide. And what I enjoyed about the All Blacks is that they got the ball and they ran. You know, and they scored tries running 50 meters or 30 meters or 40. They didn't get the ball and just kind of power their way through, you know, and I think that's what you enjoy. And that's where rugby league even comes into it or other sports. And you want to see those sprinters, you know, you want to see that kind of game where they break the line and score. And New Zealand scored four wonderful tries. Believe me, you don't see what I'm saying to you because, you know, the experts who commentate and write up in the press and that have a different view of mine. You know, but I, you know, because I looked at it as a, you know, just as an outsider saying, okay, I'm going to enjoy a game of rugby. And I must tell you something. I know I'm going on here, but my son in Australia, he takes his two boys to club rugby. And it was a club rugby championships in Sydney. And there were 15, 20,000 people.
Gosh.
You know, just for a club rugby. Why? Because it's fun. Do you understand what I'm saying to you? It's fun.
Yes, I do. You know what I mean? And
it's fun. There's no VAR or TMO. you know what I mean? They enjoy it. It's like going on a Sunday to go watch Village Green football or cricket or something like that. And, you know, they loved it. The boys loved it because even though there's crowds, they're free to move around. You know, they're not packed in or anything like that. And it's 1 kilometer from where they live and so on. And that's the enjoyment you really want. You know, you just want to have fun.
Mm-hmm. That's right. Well, you're quite right. It starts out with you start loving a sport, and then you know, if you don't pick it up, then fine. But you still stay a fan. It's the initial impression that you give a child of a sport, rather than it being so serious and a very overzealous school teacher who's a part-time referee. You know, he's watched too many Match of the Days on the BBC, and he thinks he should be like that. But anyway, talking about football, David, Erling Haaland has scored 7 goals in 3 games.
Yeah.
He's unbelievable. Yeah. You see, the key point was that he got on his rented private jet, went down to Marbella, sat in his villa for the summer while the other blokes were kicking around in the in the Euros.
Yes.
And they were exhausted when they came back. But Haaland comes back looking slimmer and fitter and hungrier. Yes. And he comes in, he's taking them apart. He's a machine. Yes. Arsenal, maybe a little bit unlucky with Declan Rice, but it was his own fault. Technically, he should have been sent off. Common sense-wise, he shouldn't have been, but he was.
I know. You know, it's W.G. Gray said, listen, they come to watch me. You remember when he's bowled first ball, he threw the ball back to the bowler and said, listen, they've come to watch me bat, not you bowl. And I think you pay £100 a ticket.
And more.
You know, you want to watch 11-11. Mm. You know, you don't want stupid decisions. Yes, if he was malicious, if it was a lunge and tore someone else, I can understand those things. But this was, anyway, it's going to happen, Lindsay. It's going to happen. You know what I mean? How many games are there? 380 games, whatever it is, somewhere along the line, you're going to find these things happening. So I liked Declan Rice's attitude. He just says, okay, happen, move on.
Yeah, he was upset, but you're quite right. He's a mature young fellow. And the other thing is, when you think of a team, you think of Arsenal, you think of City, you think of Barcelona, Real Madrid, etc. Oh. You know how they're going to play. They've got a system. When I watched Manchester United against Liverpool yesterday, Manchester United, it's almost as though Ten Hag says, right, who wants to play today? And 11 of them put their hand up and they say, okay, off you go. Which one is the fastest? And I am Mr. Ten Hag. Okay, you go on the right wing and run your lungs out.
Terrible.
They were absolutely dreadful. They've got no system. They don't know where they are, what they're doing. Casemiro, I don't know what he was doing. I don't know if he's in the pocket of a bookmaker or something. But how many times he gave them two goals? Terrible. It was too terrible. Mind you, it couldn't happen to a nicer team.
True.
It was good. Anyway, David, thank you very much for your illuminating time as always. That was David Shapiro from Sasser & Securities, and that was Shapiro World. The views and opinions expressed in these podcasts are those of Lindsay Williams and various contributors and do not reflect the policy, position, or opinion of any other agency, organization, employer, or company associated with strictlybusinesspodcast.com. Assumptions made on the analyses are not reflective of the position of any other entity other than the speaker or the author. And since we are critically thinking human beings, these views are always subject to change, revision, and rethinking at any time. Please do not hold us to them in perpetuity.